Our next case on the same subject matter, the same statutes, is Hylex Poly Company et al. Versus the United States, 2022-2106 and 2114. Mr. Bylan.
May it please the Court. Thank you. So I have just two brief points. We are dealing with the same statute and the same regulatory regime that Mr. Gordon just talked about.
And so we're only talking about
delinquency interest.
Yeah, delinquency
interest. Yes, Your Honor. So two brief points. We agree that the plain language of the statute compels the conclusion that delinquency interest has to be distributed to domestic producers and should have been produced all the way back to 2001. And we also want to argue that all of our claims are timely, going back all the way to 2001, that the statute of limitations does not bar our action. So there is a two-year statute of limitations, but under the case law from this Court, you have to be on notice, right? You have to have been able to perfect your claim for that statute of limitations to start to run.
Well, that's when the claim accrued. When does the claim accrue? The cause of action accrue. That's in the statute of limitations.
Right. So our statute of limitations accrue and we're on notice. So we didn't, it didn't start to run until, for us, 2015. So Mr. Gordon talked about a private phone call in 2014 to which we were not a party. They then filed a lawsuit in 2016. There's communications with Congress in 2015 and 2016 about finally coming clean about what they were doing. But I wanted to start at the beginning. So going back in the administrative record, well, I guess, at a high level, and then I'll talk about each one. The supplemental administrative record shows that Customs actually made preparations to distribute 1505 interest before issuing the proposed rule. They then issued the proposed rule, and after that, there's a decisional document that they changed their mind, and then we have the final rule. It's our position that they didn't tell the public what they were doing in that final rule. And it wasn't until 15 years later that they told Congress, we haven't been distributing delinquency interest. And Congress was really unhappy with Customs, right? Senator Grassley in a letter called it an injustice. And Senator Thune said that for reasons that defy simple explanation, Customs decide to ignore the statute.
I have a concern about that. One is that's just a few members. And so what I understand you want me to take from that Congress intended a different interpretation, but it's a little awkward when you've just got a few members in the statute. I think the statute should say what it says, whatever that is. So I want your response to that.
On what the statute says?
No, I want your response on what I've just said, is that why should I take the comments of a few members to mean that I should interpret it the way you advocate?
So I'm not telling you that that's why you should interpret the statute. The statute stands on its own and it's clear and ambiguous.
So why do you think the government's position about when you look at funds, all funds from assessed duties received, that it limits it to the duties that were received at liquidation plus liquidation interest?
Right. So looking at the statute, Your Honor, so Customs would have you, so I think the D&E are doing different things. So you asked the question in the prior argument about what does funds mean? What's the difference between funds and duties? So I think that subsection D is actually the grant of the statutory right about the funds that the ADDPs are entitled to. And subsection E is like the ministerial section about how Customs is supposed to distribute that. There's a case in 1994 called Mitsubishi that Customs only has a ministerial role in distributing funds. They don't have a substantive role. They don't get to decide what gets distributed. Right? They only have a role in administering how it's distributed.
Do you agree, though, that if the statute should be interpreted the way they did, that's the end of the question? There isn't, so that's really the big question here, right?
No, because in subsection E, subsection 3, so you go E3, Congress gives an explicit grant of authority to Customs about how they can rulemake. And the explicit grant of authority is...
Okay, wait, maybe I didn't phrase my question correctly.
Yeah, sure, sorry.
Assuming hypothetically the government's interpretation of the statute was correct, then your argument that they violated Section 3 has no weight, right?
So if hypothetically. If the clear and unambiguous statute,
yes.
So there's no room for our interpretation.
Right.
Right.
Hypothetically. So that's what the government's position is. So I'm asking you to respond to it.
Right. And
rely on the language, all funds from assessed duties received, to say that means just the duties at the time of liquidation. So what's your response to that?
They only get that way by ignoring subsection D completely. They're reading, you read their brief, they only talk about subsection E, which is the this is the point of Mitsubishi.
I'm reading the language of subsection D.
Right. So, shall distribute.
For your interpretation of subsection D, it says the commissioner shall distribute all funds, then there's a parenthetical, but the language after the parenthetical modifies the funds. It says all funds from assessed duties. And so my question to you is, why doesn't that mean, as the government says, that it means the duties at the time of liquidation, the funds, all funds from assessed duties received? I just want your position on it.
Because I want to be clear, Your Honor, and this is why I'm hanging up. I'm sorry, and trying to be responsive. Their argument about assessment meaning liquidation is based on E. Like, they say that are assessed means at liquidation. So the are assessed is different than from assessed, right? From assessed, right? Funds from assessed duties, that can include things other than the duties themselves, right? So that's from assessed duties. So the funds include things other than the assessed duties, or else it would say duties, right? And so we know that that can include interest. And that's the difference between are assessed in E and from assessed in D. But I guess to answer your question at large, you have to give meaning to the parenthetical, including all interest earned on the funds. And subsection D is the definitional section about what they are entitled to get. And subsection E is about how you give it to them. But they want to read the how you give it to them section to read out all out of the prior subsection. But there's this cross-reference in E that says, if you have any questions consistent with the subsection D, you have to just make distributions according to that. So the word all in subsection D is broad, and it doesn't say only 1677G interest. They spend 5 pages in their brief, and she just spent her whole oral argument explaining why all doesn't mean all, but all has to mean something. And they have no answer for the fact that their reading gives no meaning to the word all. And
she focused on all interest earned on. So I don't want to say that she only focused on all. Can you respond to that in particular?
Including all interest earned on the funds. And so that is the limitation on the interest. And is it earned on the funds that come from assessed duties? I think the answer for 1505D interest is unequivocally yes. If you have a delinquent payment of anti-dumping duties, and then there's interest earned on those duties, I don't know how you can stand here and say that interest is not earned on the funds, right? And again, it's a broader word, funds. You're talking about all the funds in the account. So that could also include, so if you think about what would be in the account, you also have 1677G interest in there, right? By the time it's accruing delinquency interest, right? So in D, when you're talking about what actually is it, my clients are entitled to, it's a broad grant of remedial authority, and that makes sense because of the design of the statute. It's meant to compensate domestic producers for the harm caused by continued dumping. And it makes sense that when you have a producer who's delinquent for years and years and years and years, that interest would also go to the domestic producer, because interest protects the underlying corpus of money against inflation and compensates them for the time value of money. So in a remedial statute like this, it doesn't make any sense to cut off interest and then send it to the Treasury at some point, because that undermines the remedial purpose.
What about the argument that Congress knew how to delineate both types of interest, and it did so very clearly in 4401? I think I know what your response is going to be, is that 4401 came after the statute in question.
That's right, and also they used the word all. I don't want to keep harping on the word all, but they didn't use the word only. They didn't use the word 1677G. Congress used the word all and also used it in the right subsection, in the subsection that describes what my clients are entitled to. But before I run out of time and happy to answer any other questions you have on the text, I want to talk about the statute of limitations, because if you look at the historical record here, what the agency has done is really egregious, right? So as I said in that supplemental record, when they issued the proposed rule, they were planning on distributing 1505 interest. There's a decisional document after the proposed rule where they make the decision not to distribute it, and then you have the final rule, right? And then there's this 15-year lag. And I think, Judge Stoll, you'd asked me earlier about why do you take Congress's word for it, but it's just not Congress's word for it in the historical record. So Mr. Gordon and Mr. Gordon's record, his law firm actually tried to sue Customs for an accounting about what they're doing with delinquency interest in 2009, right? Because we just can't. We stand here today, we still don't know how much interest Customs owes us because they won't give us an accounting. And Customs didn't respond. That's the Sue Honey case in their record. Customs did not respond with, we don't owe you delinquency interest. Instead, they opposed on a motion to dismiss and dumped them out on 12B6 because they didn't have concrete claims about the harm. Why? Because Customs won't tell us what they were doing, right? So if you look at all the pieces of the factual record, it's just clear nobody knew what they were doing with delinquency interest until 2015.
Can you point me to where in the record it shows that they were planning on distributing delinquency interest?
So it's in our record at Appendix 3604, Public Appendix 3604. So this says, OF and OIT will consider possible methods for assigning 5005 interest to specific ADCV cases for purposes of deposit in the clearing account and eventual transfer into the special account for disbursement. And then in the very next paragraph, they talk about 1677G interest. So we know they're talking about delinquency interest. So this is a document dated February 2001. We know that they then go on in June 2001 to issue the proposed rule. And then on page 36, Appendix 3672, on a document dated August 2001, right, so this is after the proposed rule, they say the decision has been made that accrued interest for late payment of a bill will not be made available for disbursement under the Byrd Amendment.
What page are you on? I'm sorry.
Appendix 3672.
Where are you looking at that on 3672? A lot of redactions here.
Yeah, so it's in the middle of the page. It's indented. It says note. It starts with capital N-O-T-E in all caps. Very middle of the page.
So the first page you point us to, 3604, it sounds like they're considering it. And then it says...
Your Honor, just to point you back to 3604, considering methods for... They have no statutory right under their own regulation to distribute these interests unless Congress told them to, because otherwise it would go to the Treasury. So they're considering methods for distribution. They're not considering whether it should be distributed. I'm in my rebuttal time. I wanted to make one more point about the preamble. I mean, to reiterate Mr. Gordon, if you read so the frustrating thing about the government's brief is they're like, this is our rule. And what do they quote to you? Right out of they quote you the preamble. They quote you what's in the CFR. And if you look at the beginning of that preamble, you'll see that they then point you back to the proposed rule. Right? They answer their question, as we said, in the proposed rule. The problem is if you read the proposed rule, it contemplates distribution of proposed interest or distribution of delinquency interest. And so it can't that paragraph, as Mr. Gordon said, didn't put anyone on notice and couldn't possibly put you on notice of what they were doing. Until the Congress, eventually in 2016 in the Federal Register, finally said, in plain English, we're not distributing delinquency interest, and then we sued, all of our claims are timely. I'd like to save my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Yes. We'll give you 2 minutes back for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Ms. Farrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. In response to the Hillex's, you know, kind of limited argument, discussing, for example, the record. The record, they say, well, there was something after the proposed rule, and they say we're not, you know, it be noted, a decision has been made that we're not going to do that. Did Customs consider, there's no question in the administrative record early on, Customs considered 1505D interest and distributing it. Then there's a note in August, but in May there's no discussion. If we go back to the administrative record that was being cited, the public administrative record, there's a May 29th draft that starts at Appendix 3622. And it runs through ...3629. There's nothing in there about 1505D interest. So the recitation on page 3672 about note decision has been made. It's not that the decision was made then, because we have an absence in May of 2001. May 29, there's no discussion anymore about trying to figure out how you might be able to give 1505, which would only be for anti-dumping, 1505D, because the other stuff doesn't apply. So I don't think that the court can look at somehow there's this nefarious thing after the proposed rule. The proposed rule comes out June 26th. May, they've already dropped the possibility of a 1505D because there's nothing there. There's a notation that says, oh, FYI, by the way, in case you were wondering, there'd been a decision made. But that decision was made before the proposed rule. Also, talking about, oh, we didn't know, no one knew. There's a reason that Federal Register notices are considered notice to you. If you're, you know, if I have nothing to do with importing, you know, I work in a restaurant and I make, you know, I bake cakes. I don't care about this Register notice. But if I'm an ADP and there's something coming out about the CDSOA, my eyes are big. And you can't say that you didn't read the whole thing. That would be silly. The section, there's the preamble. Yeah, I think the most important part of this thing is the preamble. Because ultimately...
Isn't it that they read the preamble differently than the government does? Isn't that the real issue?
Well, if they do, Your Honor, it doesn't make sense to read it differently than the government does, because the language is plain. That only 1677G interest is going to be distributed. I mean, the section comes up with comments. There's one question about, oh, well, if there's an overpayment, you won't reduce R. And I do think that word all in the funds that are being distributed, I do think it relates back to the fact that each entry, if there was an underpayment, there was interest that has to be distributed. Because you can't
review that when it says all interest, it means all of the underpayment interest?
All of the 1677 underpayment interest, yes. And to not allow a 1677 overpayment interest that gets paid to an importer to deduct from the amount that would naturally go in. So there's all of those entries that were under deposited generated 1677G interest. There may have been one entry or a big entry that also generated interest that was to go back to the importer. And so they're saying all interest that was earned, Customs is interpreting that as your entry earned interest for you. And so we will not allow another entry to somehow come in and undermine that. I believe that that's what that all interest earned on the funds. But nevertheless, we're talking about earned on the funds. 1505D interest is money that arises because somebody didn't pay a bill. So that's not earned on funds. We're talking, we know that the construct of anti-dumping is that there are deposits being made. We know in banks the concept of earning on the funds that you deposited in a bank. So the trial court focused on earned. He said, we need to understand this. And that was why the trial court came out the way that it did, that 1505D interest isn't applicable. But also, if Customs so egregiously, mischievously got this wrong, why, when TIFTA is passed, does Congress not give them, they limit it. They say it only goes back to October 2014. It's only for sureties, and it's only for live cases. After the CDSOA was enacted, Congress keeps nipping at its heels and is reducing, indeed it repeals it in 2007. But in 2010, they pass another act that says, well, if it's unliquidated and nothing has happened yet on it, it's not going to apply to you anymore. They keep narrowing, and they further narrow in TIFTA. What's not in TIFTA is an importer.
Well, if an importer somehow we should consider TIFTA here, and do you feel like we need to consider it in order for you to win your argument?
I think we should consider TIFTY. Let me start with that first. So yes, I do agree that we should consider TIFTY because it tells us what Congress is thinking. It helps us round out the entire act because TIFTY does apply to the CDSOA. Do I need TIFTY to get a fair reading? I don't think so. I think that the language that's used is very strange, that they're talking about, you know, the funds that go into the account that will be distributed don't have all interest as part of the instruction. So Congress is, I think, informed us, but I think also plain language of the statute has similarly informed us that a temporal assessed duty is only grabbing 1677G interest. It is not grabbing 1505D delinquency interest, which presumes people aren't doing what they're supposed to do, which is paying on time or depositing sufficient amounts. With respect to the Federal Register notice, there's a question about interest, and Customs says, and if you're reading, you wouldn't just stop reading. You read about the interest because you care about interest. There's a heading. It says interest. So you read through it. And you say, because Congress did not make explicit provisions for accounts established under CDSOA to be interest-bearing. Well, interestingly enough, if you really wanted all interest, wouldn't you also want time value of money while that was sitting in the account for 1 year? Congress didn't do that. The breadth of the CDSOA isn't as broad as the ADPs would hope. Because if it were, Congress would have also given interest on the account for that time period that is sitting there. But following that, it then says, thus, only interest charged on anti-dumping and countervailing duty funds themselves pursuant to the express authority in 19 U.S.C. 1677G will be transferred to the special accounts and made available for distribution under the CDSOA. So they're telling you, special accounts is where the money's going to go. As it's coming in, it's going into the special accounts. And then when the time comes at the fiscal year end and we're going to do a distribution, we'll announce the distribution. You'll say, yay, I'm waiting for my distribution. And the only thing that will be distributed is that which is in those special accounts. And the only thing that's in those special accounts is 1677G interest. It says it right there. And so if you disagreed with that, you also knew that 19 CFR 24.3A, CBP bills, interest assessment on bills, delinquency, etc., is clear to the public that if you're late, the first batch of the money is applied to interest. And no one would be shocked by that because that is the commercial reality across the board everywhere in contracts that are dealing with somebody owing money. If you're late, the money's applied to interest first, your credit card, your mortgage, loans, anything else. So there's no surprise here. So if your honors have no further questions, I think that the proposed rule, the final rule, put everyone on notice. I think the plain language of the CDSOA talks about assessed duties and interest running on those assessed duties, and you'll get all the interest that ran. The underpayments will be all that interest that you get, and overpayment will not diminish. It will not reduce the amount of the underpayments. You'll get that. And that was answered because that was a question the ADPs had because they wanted to know. So they were aware that 1677G, by asking that question, they were aware that 1677G is what was in play in this statute. Thank you, Your Honors. For the reasons in our briefing and for the reasons in the trial court should be affirmed and I thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Garland has
yes, briefly. I think she just explained why their reading of 16 of the statute reads all completely out of the statute. She just said that they pay themselves delinquency interest first on late payments, meaning that they don't even pay all 1677G interest to my clients. So all means nothing in the reading of the statute, and our reading of the statute is the only one that gives any meaning to that word in the statute. I also wanted to point the court's attention that the only reason that was given in the administrative record under the penalty of perjury for the decision here was a technological limitation. And under this court's precedent in the Aqua Products case, you said that, and there is no place in the regulations or relevant commentary where reference to an ambiguity or statutory silence is mentioned, claimed, or explored. Chevron does not apply where an agency has not actually addressed the issue it purports to be within its discretion to address. There's no room for Chevron here because the agency simply was not interpreting the statute. And a couple of other points on rebuttal. TIFTIA came after an intervening WTO case. You can't look at TIFTIA to explain anything about the original CDSOA. The record site from the May 2001 record entry, which I can give you the appendix site for, that's at appendix 3624, doesn't say anything about delinquency interest, right? It doesn't say that this is, so it's just silent on it. It doesn't do anything for them. And, you know, just under the presumption of regularity, after reading the plain language of the statute and seeing that it said all interest, there was just no reason why the public would assume that that Customs was going to go against that for 16 years. And it was only after that was revealed by Congress that our claims accrued and all of our claims are timely. So we would ask that this court vacate the decision below and remand for judgment for our clients. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted, and that concludes today's arguments.